Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 236 of the Distraction Pieces podcast. I'm joined today by one that you lot have been waiting for a long time. I recorded it over a month ago, up to 2 months ago, I think. But as a lot of you, as anyone in the Patreon club at patreon.com/ScroobiusPipple know, I've been recording so many podcasts over the last month. If you're not on Patreon, that's where I reveal each episode when I actually record them. And I recorded one a few weeks back that goes up next week. My Halloween two-part special that is one of the biggest guests I've had. Someone who rarely does interviews. And we've done a two-part special. It's amazing. Anyway, but this week's one is one that a lot of you have been asking for because I posted about it at the time on regular social media, just before I had a Patreon. And it's the epic beard men themselves, Sage Francis and B. Dolan. And I was so pleased to make this happen. The guys were on tour of the UK in September, was it? End of August, September. And I decided to drive down and catch them in Cardiff. I caught them in Cardiff and I caught them in Brighton. But when I went down to Cardiff, I said, look, let's try and do a podcast. I'll get a hotel. By chance, I got a hotel or the same hotel that they were staying in. The gig went good, but they had interviews booked. And I said, look, let's just leave it. I don't want to add stress. I know how touring a life can be. I don't want to add any pressure. And then I got a message from Dolan saying, oh, we've finished all the other interviews. Let's do it. So we started this at about 1 o'clock, I think. I'm sure we say in the podcast. And we talked for a good 90 minutes. We're a little bit gig hyped. We ramble. We maybe say some things that we maybe shouldn't say, but who knows? and the interesting part is after this, me and B had to... I'll tell you at the end what happened afterwards. Speaking of these two guys, I mean, we talk a lot about records and all that kind of thing. Both of their albums on Speech Development Records are available at speechdevelopmentrecords.com on vinyl. Sage Copper Gone is on gold vinyl. And a B. Dolan, the wolf one, I'm mocking, I'm just being annoying, is on blue vinyl. Head over there and check him out. You can also get CDs signed, all sorts of signed stuff over at speechdevelopmentrecords.com. We've got loads of good stuff. I know I mentioned the Patreon earlier, but either the web store or the Patreon, it's kind of cool if you've listened to a fair few podcasts, then it'd be cool for you to chip in if you can afford it. Originally, I'd always ask if you can afford it, buy some merch. Now, the reason I started the Patreon is if you can't afford to buy some merch, then the Patreon is like a quid a month. So that would hopefully go unnoticed. And if enough of you do it, it can have a big impact on future podcast guests, on where I can travel to do podcasts, all sorts of stuff. Give that a look if you can. That'd be cracking. Patreon.com/ScroobiusPip and speechdevelopmentrecords.com. As I'm telling people the upcoming guests on Patreon, I want to kind of hold off on here, but they will know that in the coming weeks I'm looking now. I've got two actual living legends. I've got a returning guest who's been one of the most popular in the past. I've got one of my favourite and one of the most exciting MMA fighters currently fighting. I've got a director that his debut film has been one of the year's big unexpected hits on Netflix. I've got two directors who've just shaken things up with their recent films. There's a lot of exciting episodes to come. And next week, as I said, it's one of the living legends I mentioned, not the rap group The Living Legends. It's getting confusing now. It's a really good guest and you're going to enjoy it. But for now, enjoy Sage Francis and B. Dolan, the epic beard men themselves, on episode 236 of the Distraction Pieces podcast.
This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. Chaka 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 chaka.
Yeah.
When me and B did our actual version of this podcast the first time, it was after a month of being on the road together, and it's the only podcast I've done that I forgot to take a Polaroid of us, and it was literally the day we ended it, and you went back, wasn't it?
So, was that the one on the boat?
Yeah, we called it on a boat. They kept having announcements, alarms.
You get a Polaroid with Spike Lee?
Yeah, I got a Polaroid with Spike. Did he sit on your lap? I leant in a little. In the main photo we took, all the comments were, how small is that guy? And it's not fair, because I am 6'4", so it's kind of...
Yeah, but he is small, and you are large.
He's small. I had a photo with Stephen Graham the same night, who's a British actor, who's really good, but he's also small. And yeah, it just looked like everyone...
You can't, that's an impedance to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because actors are small.
Yeah.
And now, like, you have to crouch down.
Genuinely, the first scene I had on Taboo, I'm standing there with Stephen Graham, and he's been saying to me, any minute now, someone's going to stand in front of us really awkwardly. It'll be a young person. And I was like, what? And he did. And he's like, just wait. And this young person comes and goes, is it okay if I just pop you on this box? Because he had to stand Stevie on a box to get him more to my level. And he was like, happens every time I'm doing this. And they always send the youngest, newest guy, just like some awkward little teen, like, I'm ever so sorry. Can I just put me on a box for this scene?
That's why fucking Tom Cruise wears platform shoes.
Yeah, yeah. I should introduce.
Nobody puts Tommy on the box.
I should introduce. I'm joined by Sage Francis and B. Dolan, Epic Beard Men.
You know what it is. Epic Beard Men up in this piece. We are all men who happen to have beards.
Yeah.
And we are epic. But it's not about being an epic man. Mm-hmm. It's not about having an epic beard.
Nope.
It's just those three words
together
fell into that
separate
order.
Definitions.
Yeah.
Interestingly, it's just occurred to me that this is post-show in Cardiff, and it was post-show in Cardiff when Sage was the fifth or sixth person on my podcast.
Oh, really? That was the only one we did?
It was in Cardiff. It's only just occurred to me.
Because we were staying in that weird place where...
Really weird hotel. The woman wasn't up for you coming in at certain times of night.
It was a bed and breakfast. It was not a hotel.
It was really strange.
It was, because she had to show us how phones work.
Yeah.
Did you guys get an apartment together?
No, we were staying in different... No, we were...
In separate rooms.
That's so weird.
It was in separate rooms, but in this weird B&B. In Cardiff. But it was really odd. She had to show how certain bits of plumbing worked. And
which I would appreciate if it was with the shower, because every shower out here has its own combination of...
Yeah.
Like, it's an escape room shower, usually. Yeah. I have to figure out a code.
It's exactly that. You got to figure out how to make... The optimal shower. Are you guys? I assume you've got separate rooms.
Yeah.
On these runs,
because this is the first time in a while we've had separate rooms. We toured through the U.S. Every night we're in the same room because we're just trying to cut down on costs.
Yeah.
This is indie music living.
Yeah.
Out here we got paid a flat fee for the 11 shows we're doing in a row.
11 in a row with no days off.
Yeah, and thankfully it does include us at having our own room each night, but it's also, I typically am the one who books all the hotels and stuff like that, and I meticulously look through reviews and often leave my own, not under my own name. I have a...
That's your unofficial discography. I was thinking that the other day. Like, there's a book full of Sage Francis
hotel reviews. Like, I go in,
really? Yelp reviews,
amazing. And I'm not doing it for any recognition, that's why I don't do it under my own name.
It's out there,
but I appreciate it. When I look at reviews and I see what people say, I'm like, man, I'm so happy you said that was a gift. Now I know whether to go there or not go there, and I'm this altruism. This is just I'm a giver, you know, like I am there to give as well.
But you know what you want from a hotel room on a tour. I've had a tour managers in the past who are like, I found this amazing place. And again, it looks pretty, it's kooky, but it's not got Wi-Fi. Or it's not got the base.
You have to park a mile away.
Yeah. It's location and the basics of Wi-Fi and stuff like that.
Like, I don't care if we stay in a trap house.
Yeah.
I want to be able to park outside of the fucking hotel. I do want Wi-Fi. Those are the two main things. If those are working and they have that.
If you got a clean bathtub,
That's a bonus.
I don't give a fuck about a bathtub. I don't even care if the water doesn't work.
I like a clean bathtub.
I don't. That's like I'll get you another room.
I like. I just like powerful water pressure.
Yeah.
Windows that open all the way.
I've that's noticed. Key. Yeah. On the,
powerful. Water
like here, is, look at this. We got a double panel. This, like you can open never this get to the outside. Bit. You can't get open that.
I can basically open a window that. There's a window ledge that's got a plant on it.
So you
can,
know our best.
I can open a window to look at the plant.
This is the
to
shit,
get closer
man.
To the plant.
We our best honestly our best hotel so far didn't even have windows in it.
Yeah,
that was like a Ex Machina type environment.
Yeah. or
that was an Ex Machina hotel. Did you see that movie?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, so it's an awesome movie. Yeah, like I just recently watched it with my fiance, and we got into an argument.
Yeah,
because at the end of it, she was like. Oh, I feel so bad for Ava. And I'm like, yo, this dude created a sociopath robot.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad for her because she does not care about anyone else that she just fucked over.
Yeah.
And to me, that was the message of the movie, but she totally disagrees. Like, we come from different experiences, and also she very much empathized with a woman who is unable to empathize with other people.
Anyways, we
stayed in Ex Machina Hotel. Also, on her birthday, we went to an escape room called Ex Machina.
Amazing.
Yeah, look at all these things all connect, dude. I'm not saying my life is laid out in a super interesting way, but...
It's planned out beautifully.
Someone's writing this novel.
I've got two things there, because the hotel that we're staying in, I was telling B, it's the Royal Hotel, I think it's called, in Cardiff.
Of course.
It's a castle.
We're in the normal rooms. They've got rooms that are cinema rooms. Apparently, they're the same price.
But Star Wars room.
There's a Star Wars room and cinema rooms. And it's got all this amazing stuff, but the warning on it says, please note, these rooms have no windows. So that's kind of the trade-off.
These rooms have no windows. Yeah, these rooms have fake-ass windows.
No, these rooms have four windows that don't open.
This is crazy.
Like, good for us. Windows.
The nicer the hotel, the further you will get from air. You have no access to air.
And the more expensive internet will be.
Yeah.
So when you're touring and you are sharing, are you better behaved in hotel rooms if you're touring with Sage than when you were touring with us? Because
I masturbate a lot more when I have my own room.
That's always...
When we share rooms, I notice...
I'm tidy.
His Q-tips are all over the room.
My Q-tips wander.
He thinks sometimes they just go in the sink. He thinks sometimes they stay in the bathtub. What's going on here?
I like to spread my fucking wings at the end of the night.
Water pressure was an interesting thing to mention because every hotel room I've ever stayed in would be... He seemed to think the bathroom's a wet room, and literally within 10 minutes,
no, you know
the
why? Because your tiny little your tiny little country's showers are tiny for your tiny ass hobbit people that live here.
So B. Dolan is like the Andre the Giant of Europe.
Yeah, anytime I'm in a fucking shower, the curtain touches me and clings to me, and then I think of all the other people it has touched and clung to, and I don't want it on me. I just want I say, fuck the shower curtain.
Yeah.
I push it away because fuck it. Fuck this tile. Really I don't
not,
live here.
There's really not many shower curtains out here. There's often the glass doors.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there's a glass door, I'll make use of whatever is available to me.
But yeah, the
I'm not going to go out of my way to.
You have to wade through the bathroom after he's
what happens, happens in the bathroom.
Your showers are too long, by the way.
No, my showers are the only good part of my life. So
God, that's the most depressing shit.
Listen,
that's like
pretend
we're married.
I'm in the womb.
Like his only time away from me is the shower, so he makes it extra long.
No.
Literally moments ago.
I have very sore muscles that I like to just let soak.
I came back from the gig and you guys were doing some radio and Dolan gets back to the mission again.
All right, now we're going to make an issue on my showers. Let's talk. Talk about it.
He's like, we're back and we're down for doing the podcast. I was like, look, there's no pressure. He's like, no, we're down. I'm going to have a shower and then we'll give you a shout. So he said, so I'll message you in about an hour and 20. I was like, dude, just having a shower. It's just why you need an hour and 20.
That's my happy time. That's my alone time.
So.
That's my steam, little steam in the lungs, little hot water on the muscles, little shave the head.
It's all about the self-care.
I'm self-care, you know? I also stretch. I like to lay on the floor.
I always remember a travel lodge that we were sharing on one of the tours. And it was just a funny moment because I hadn't slept for the whole tour because he'd been snoring this whole time and I was a light sleeper. And just your bag was obviously on the brink of death, and as you lifted it up and threw it on the bed, it just opened and the whole room was just trashed, just covered in lies. Like, we've literally been in the door under a minute and the room was just covered in Dolan stuff. I was like, here we go.
I have funny rituals related to the hotel room. I try and rein it in. I try and be more respectful when I have a roommate.
But I'm very OCD about room stuff and where.
Well, that's what I was gonna. That's what I was gonna ask, because
I'm weirdly OCD too. I know it seems like the total opposite.
Yeah.
But what I do every night when I get to the hotel, really in an ideal situation when the room is mine, is I explode my shit like that every single night, everywhere, and then I gradually reshuffle it, like move what's wet over to where this. We're really getting heavy into my hotel room.
Yeah.
Movements, but. And I repack the bags every day.
Yeah.
And in my head, that helps me see everything I have and account for it and hopefully not fucking lose it, but I still lose
it. You know, you've got it.
Yeah. It's weird. That's how it works. Yeah, in my head.
Yeah.
Only in my head, I'm sure.
I guess. I don't know.
It's interesting.
You got to do you. I'm honestly not tripping. I'm just saying, like, my own hotel methods are minimize, always keep things in the exact same place.
Yep.
And
same.
I clean up. I don't want a maid to have to clean up for me.
You clean
often.
Up.
Yeah. Clean up. No, you don't. You leave clown paint all over the sheets.
That was a previous era. That was we're going all the way back. There's a full audit of my fucking hotel room habits.
I was just thinking that there was times where I was like, they're going to have to throw these sheets away. It looks like they're full of blood. There's no way this is coming out.
Well, you spent a long time performing in makeup.
Yes,
right?
I did.
Some way,
and so. It was horrible. Like every night, that was another reason that the long shower developed as a part of the post-show ritual, was like that shit would take, there's no way to get it off without spending an hour in the shower scrubbing the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And you're still pink at the end. And you're still like everything you touch is going to be pink for a little while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good that we've established kind of a husband and wife type relationship here. Because one of the
His wife is a saint, straight up.
She is.
I did the best man speech and I had to mention it because she is a saint and
genuinely the best man speech I've ever heard. It was stunning.
I revisited it recently. I'm not as proud of it as I was.
Oh really?
Soon after. Yeah, There's more
you want to add?
I could have tightened it up. I could have tightened it up. It could have been more succinct. And there was the one part of the speech that bugs me the most is when I was telling your wife how great you are on tour, like as far as your interactions with women and stuff. Because I'm I always think when people think of rappers on tour or musicians on tour, it's just a free for all. And we're all having parties and girls are just falling all over us and we're taking it.
Yeah.
But the fact – now I watched it and I was like – why did I even say that? Because it looked like I was trying to like cover up for some shit.
Yeah.
And that's just now how at the time I didn't. I was like, this is worth noting. And now when I watch that, I'm like, that was a dumb thing to say.
But it's a legit point. Cause I genuinely learned from B in that respect. Cause there was times when we were on tour and I mean, we've told the story before of on the cruise ship where things were kicking off.
Oh,
you remember the cruise ship where there was fights, there was all sorts. But in those situations of not being rude to any young ladies at shows but having a friendly but clear and firm, defined way of being like, it's cool, this is lovely, I appreciate your appreciation, and then you stay here and I'm going over here. Yeah. It was. I think you
just get it more often than me. I get uncle zoned like right away. I am uncle zoned.
Well, that shit actually worked out though before we move off it, because in the early years when we were dating, that was a thing that there were certain members of my family that were not down with what I do, who tried to kind of like subvert our relationship and kind of like say shit in her ear. Like, when he's on tour, like, you know how it goes. Like, that doesn't worry you. And she was always like, no, it doesn't. Like, it's cool. Like, because we had that trust and she was there, like, as the shit escalated. So she saw the whole journey kind of. And so whether or not you meant it to be, it was actually a great kind of moment to have, because some of those people were in
for the family.
Yeah, for the family, okay. In the room to just be like, I'm in PS, motherfucker. He's been faithful.
It's weird, though, that that part of my speech has been running through my head lately.
Yeah.
And I hate myself.
No, well, hate yourself less.
I'm like, why did you say that? It's dumb. It was misinterpreted. Everyone's going to think you're fucking saying, you know, saying that because it was on your conscience. And I'm like, oh my God, I should mention this too.
If they find out.
It was more of a like, man, the best man is on our team.
Yeah.
He's on the cool kid team versus
I love that. And
but all the, you know, the grandmothers had to hold the kids' ears.
And, yeah.
You know, someday they'll get
to hear
it.
That's good.
And that has been key though, right? For to hold down a relationship when you're someone who tours constantly and in different countries. Like there's been points that you've been in the UK with us and Europe for 2-3 months. And that's that takes a special person to be able to deal with that. I mean, I know I've had long periods of not being in a relationship when touring for those exact reasons, because I was like, this isn't fair on anyone. So to have someone that can hold it down in that way is
massive. It's incredible.
She's the shit. Shout out to Desiree.
Big shout
out. Damn right. It's interesting what you were saying there, Sage, about overanalysis and breaking things down, because I've said before that B has been the best support act that we ever had. Like to the point that anytime we'd do a new tour, people would be saying, is Dolan coming? Is this and that? And from talking to Dolan on these tours, a lot of that is down to touring with you as well. Because you'd have points where you'd... I remember on one tour that I saw the two of you on, when you came off stage and Sage was getting ready, was like, did Sage... I seemed to think everything was okay. Because, it was that feeling that you'd give some notes and give kind of, here's what's not worked. Here's where you fucked up. You should be tighter on that. You're too comfortable on this or on that. And it felt like that early tour in life that you kind of would give each other, I guess, some kind of, here's what worked, like, here's what didn't.
I mean, to me, the early years were mostly the information coming one way from him to me and straight up like just learning from being around the dude and being on stage. And
part of it was making him get on stage.
That was first. That was first.
Yeah. He was part of the tour, but not on stage. And I'm like, you should be doing some stuff up there. But he was picking his spots. You know, he didn't want to immediately just jump up into the mix. He was observing. He was learning, seeing what is good and what is bad in a tour environment.
Yeah.
I respect that. But at the same time, I just, you know, we got this incredibly talented person in the van who's not touching a microphone.
He's not getting
involved. He did it one night. One night he ever went on. Yeah, that was, what were the 2000?
No More.org tour.
2005.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he was driving. He was helping with merch. He was just kind of learning how this whole indie thing happens, which is very – it's not something you go to school for. You literally have to experience it. But the only reason I had him on the tour is because I knew – you know, I was a fan of his, and I knew his potential and his trustworthiness and all the things that are necessary for a tour partner.
Yeah.
And now here we are. It's crazy. 13 years later, touring as a group.
Yeah.
With no driver. Oh, no, he's driving, actually. But I'm saying, like, we don't have that like, extra person. It's just us now.
Yeah, that's what's been dope to see the kind of developments and changes and growth there from seeing you guys come over where Dolan would do a set and then Sage would do a set and then you'd both do some stuff at the end or again from even before that where there'd be maybe one song that B jumps up in your set or things like that to it being now it's all Epic Beardmen song, a couple of solo songs thrown in with, you know, added stuff.
I personally, right? I mean, I'm sure I'm not going to speak for B, but I personally, after a while, after 10 years of us touring together with when he was actually performing, didn't feel right that he was the opener and I was the headliner.
Right, yeah.
Like, at a certain point, I was like, this is not correct.
Yeah.
And it's not something that should continue. It's not something that... In fact, I got to a point where I was like, I never want to do a show with him ever again unless it's Epic Beard Men.
Yeah.
Because I don't want him opening and me headlining and then us sprinkling a little of our duo together. Yeah, fuck all that. It's just, it didn't feel right. So this is where we're at now.
I agree.
Yeah. No. I mean, it had to get tiring. I mean, like,
no, fuck. I mean,
I'm making headline money, you're making opening money, and we're both fucking killing it on stage. And that's what openers do. But after a certain point, when it's just so common and it's just like what, because we've seen other, I'm not going to say certain artist names, but we've seen other artists who suffered from being the perpetual opener for a certain group, and they never ever get to fucking access.
And there is a line where
the higher line
where it needs to be crossed and broken, because the fact is, sure, there's a headliner and support, but a lot of people will go, oh, I'll definitely come if Sage and Dolan are there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, one or the other, they go, I'll probably go, but oh, they're both here. Oh, dope. Yeah, so it is this combined package thing that it's greater value than, as you said, an opener. It's greater value than that kind of thing. So it's dope to have that control in your own careers and the way you run your tours and things like that, to be able to say, oh, here's what it is now.
Yeah.
Here's,
and for me to have toured as long as I did solo, because there were many years I just straight up went out by myself.
Yeah.
Not nearly as enjoyable as doing it with him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Straight up. I mean, there's very few people in this world who I can be with in physical space and not get enraged.
Yeah.
I have hypertension issues. Yeah. I have high blood pressure. But he manages my fucking mood in a very, very mature and knowledgeable way.
I feel you.
Sometimes, you know, he questions it and questions me, and like, I get that, but
only when you're lost in a hotel room hallway.
I get lost a lot. That's the other thing, because like, when I tour by myself, I don't have a Dolan.
Imagine,
why are you trying to walk that way?
When I get anxious just thinking about that. Just like you, when you tour by yourself, I'm like, oh man, he's going down so many wrong hallways and streets right now.
Yeah. It's crazy to hear that, because we had that on that European tour where there was a chunk where you were going off on your own. We were like, B's not going to come back. This is because, again, in those situations, though, we were organizing it, so you did get to sit back.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until later that we saw, oh, you can do it. Or it's like, he's flaky as fuck on this tour, because he can be. As soon as it's your responsibility, it's like, oh no, I can run this shit.
That's why, you know, for me,
I was not running it, because you're paying someone to run it. Fuck that. Why would I run this shit?
Yeah, I sort of had, you know, I had like some good years as an opener. I mean, I totally appreciate the love. Or like, you know, this guy's not an opener anymore, but being an opener wasn't that bad. Like,
I love being an opener.
And I used to look at you and be like, man, Sage is so tight all the time. Like, well, man, he seems really stressed. Like, this is the coolest shit in the world we're doing. And then, like, when it was time to, like, headline or put my own shit together, I was like, oh, this is what the fuck. Why?
All those responsibilities really weigh down on a motherfucker. Like, they all just compound and multiply as you go, and you realize it's a thankless job in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Well, you're the headliner, so whatever. But I mean, in 2005 in particular, that was my most heavy touring year.
Yeah.
There may have been a couple others, but in my memory, that just was a nonstop tour year.
Yeah.
And the biggest shows with like the most promotion.
Yeah.
When you're aware of all the factors in play, like I was literally just in a fucking van, like, where are we going tomorrow? Yeah. Whoa, I've never been there. Like, he's like getting phone calls from the publicist, the label, the blah, 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 the promoter, the pre-sales, you know.
And like, I got people from 2005 still contacting me, like, why were you like this? Why did you do that? And I want to be like, do you understand what I was going through at that point in my life?
How that was,
Like, now I can look back on it and say, I'm sorry I wasn't all I could have been to you.
Yeah.
Several people, honestly. Did it seem like my life was all about me? Absolutely. Did you know that I'm Sage Francis, and this was a Sage Francis tour, and this was a Sage Francis album release, and this was a Sage Francis this and that? And, like, I was literally the product.
Yeah.
Sorry if it looked like I was egotistical for taking care of Sage Francis' business at that moment.
Yeah. It's that weird thing when you are the product, though.
Yeah.
It's different. It feels,
Again, the Epic
Beard Man. It feels like it's different if you're in a band or in a group, because it's That's the product. Whereas, as Sage Francis, at all points on that, when you've got that many shows, when you everything you're doing,
it's your face on a poster. It's your name here. It's like the comments are all about you, and
also you were driving.
Yeah, I was fucking driving the van,
And you were more. You were tour managing better than the tour manager was, and overseeing merch and me on my first. That was, man, because you hired me to do merch and drive. Yeah. And I quickly realized I was nowhere near confident enough to drive in much of America, having never driven a 16-passenger van, having never driven
a heavy motherfucking van filled with merch.
Yeah,
in the
like
back.
Down that was 2% grades and you know mountains and shit. And the schedule was so insane on that tour. It's never been like that since, I don't think. But like there were whole stretches of weeks where we were driving like 8 hours and doing the show. Big stretches between cities that we were having to do like 12-hour driving days and a show and like these really crazy drives. So there was like literally pressure to be at or above 80 miles per hour for 12 hours a day, then get to the show.
Do you know what a mile is, by the way? A mile?
They don't know what miles are.
But again, it feels like...
You don't know what yards are, I'll tell you that much.
Definitely not. It feels like I then got to reap the benefits of that birth of fire, because the first time that you supported me and Dan on the US tour, and right towards the end, Dan sacked our tour manager and sound man, and suddenly we're in America for the first time, kind of doing this big tour. We've got 4 dates left with no days off. And we had B to step up and go... Yeah. I'll get you there. I'll get behind the wheel. I'll make this happen. Yeah. It was because of those shows that he could do that and go, it's fine. It's going to be okay. Because I remember that night. It's weird because the venue we were in today had a poster for MERS. And I hadn't thought about MERS in a while. But that night that Dan sacked our tour manager.
That's right. Yeah.
We went back to Swingers Diner and Hotel. I was like, I'm going to bed, because I couldn't handle the fact that Dan had just sacked our tour manager. And
not only that, but he had left.
I was sharing the room with him and taking all of the money.
So
I was like, I'm just going to bed. And you two went in the diner and had a milkshake and bumped into MERS for some reason.
He was like, hey, what's going on? And so I'm like, well, the tour manager just quit and took all of our money. And he's like, wow. And that was kind of the end of the conversation. As I remember, he was just like...
I've had the oddest interactions at Swingers.
Yeah. Swingers is a
like nexus. Running into the most random people and also having the oddest conversations and or arguments.
Yeah.
One with Saul Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we don't go to Beverly Laurel anymore because they actually switched their whole thing up. They're not.
It was just kitschy. This amazing retro kitschy.
Yeah, it's not.
It felt like you're in the past. Like it's the first time I'd been in a shower that just had a little seat shelf. And
it felt like old Hollywood. But now they try to get a little bit more she-she.
That was the hotel. That was expensive. A magical place.
That was your tip on the whole tour. Like, everybody was like, this is where we're staying.
This is it.
I ran into Tom Arnold at Swingers. I ran into one of the actors from the movie Swingers at Swingers.
I ran into the dude from West Wing, and he was also like the bad guy in all the Revenge of the Nerds movies. Him. I watched his laptop while he went in the bathroom one time. I was like, can you watch this? I said, yeah.
That's
the whole story.
It wasn't the nerds.
No, it was the smarmy frat dude.
Okay.
The like nasally guy. But he was also on West Wing.
Who was he on West Wing? I never watched it. I don't know why I'm asking.
I haven't either. Fuck that show.
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey.
A friend of mine was going... a friend of mine was briefly dating one of the guys from West Wing, and it was meant to be this big, and he was a lovely guy, had a great meal, but I felt really confused and left out because everyone kind of was like, it's him from West, like he's this cool, and I was like, he seems like a nice dude, but yeah.
I'm going to Google it while we talk.
Yeah, I want to know.
I said Kevin Spacey, but he's not in that, right?
No, that's why I laughed.
Right. That's why you laughed, so.
But also fuck him too.
So powerfully. While you're Googling that, it occurred to me the other day, I don't know if me and you, Sage, have ever talked about my first interactions with you, which are before I was Scroobius Pip. So I saw you Where was it?
Plastic People?
Plastic People with Soul.
Oh, I didn't remember Soul being on that show. Because are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure it was with...
Okay.
Bradley Whitford, guys. It was Bradley Whitford.
That's
Bradley,
who my mate this went guy out with. Right yeah. here. That's who my mate Kenny was seeing.
I mean, look, I'm just going to enlarge it.
I had dinner with him.
who's the Penn Jillette's partner? Come on.
Penn Jillette?
Yeah, that's the magician.
Oh, Teller?
He looks like Teller. Boom. Case closed.
Bradley Whitford. Yeah, I'm sure it was with Soul.
Okay.
In London. I saw you twice there.
Okay, yeah, because the first time I was there was not with Soul, so yeah. It was the second time.
Yeah,
I was,
yeah. So I saw you, the first time there was just you on a chair.
Right.
And everyone in a circle. But I saw you at, I was trying to think what it was called. I think it was the Knitting Factory or the Button Factory in New York.
Okay.
Knitting Factory.
Yeah, Knitting Factory. Yeah.
Knitting Factory. And I saw you there with Joey Beats. And I came up to you afterwards and tried to impress you because I had a bag that looked like a ghetto blaster. And me and my mate were all hyped afterwards because you were like, that bag's cool. And we were like, yes. Sage like,
you know what's crazy?
And I think I gave you a demo or something at that point. So it was just as I started rapping and I was like.
Okay, this is wild. But a few years ago, let me see what year it was. Probably 2010, 11. I was in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
A store had a bag that looked exactly like a ghetto blaster.
Yeah.
And I bought it for my girlfriend at the time. And I'm like, oh my God, she's going to love this so much. And like, she looked at it like, this is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. And I just took it back. I was like, just kidding. I got this for me. And now it just sits in my studio room with no use at all.
That's brilliant. I planted that years ago.
Yeah, now I know what. Now I know why. You incepted
like, me. Check out yeah. my bag.
You incepted a bad relationship moment for me. Thanks.
I did.
Thanks,
Pip. That's fucked up, man.
I apologize.
How'd you do that to him?
But yeah, when I was searching for an email from one of our interactions a while ago, I did a search on a Hotmail or something like that, and I found an email from when I'd recorded my first ever tracks, and I emailed you because your email was on your CDs and stuff like that.
Right.
And the amount of playing it cool swearing in the email, it's like, yeah, you know, you probably don't give a fuck, but, you know, what the fuck? Fuck, it's fucking cool. I mean, it's probably shit, but, you know, fuck it. I thought I'd fucking send it and fucking just check it out. Or don't. It's cool. I don't give a shit. And it's just the most cringy fucking casual. I'm playing it cool, man. It's cool. Just whatever. It's whatever.
I wish I could access that. I can't get into my Hotmail account.
I'll try and find it. Because I said it came up in a search a year or so ago. And I was like, I don't know if I even want to open this because this is going to be painful. Because it is. It's that first demos kind of stage where you're like, and again, I have people hit me up all the time. Like,
I had to have responded, right? I
think on that one you didn't.
That is an exception of the rule.
Oh, that's it. But yeah, because I know you to kind of, that's, you know, it must always, have been real bad.
Not now. I did change that rule. But up until a couple years ago, no matter what anyone sent me, I would always respond.
Yeah.
I mean, this was my job. It's my life.
Yeah.
I think it's important.
Completely.
But for my own well-being now and my own mental health, I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But for ages, for at least starting from 97 until it had at least been 19 years where no matter where people messaged me, I would respond.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And it was, I don't know if it was fruitful or not, but like if these people are interactive with me, that means they feel some type of connection. And they're more likely to continue to follow my career and hopefully support it.
Yeah.
Even the haters, though. I even responded to the hate mail.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
that's amazing.
What good was that?
And that's not great for your mental health in general to be engaged
in that. It is, though, because the praise comes in and the hate comes in.
Yeah.
And you have to accept both.
Yeah.
You can't just say, I deserve that praise. I don't deserve that hate.
Completely.
It's just, accept
both or ignore both.
Yeah,
It's one or the other. Yeah, I completely agree.
They take a little bit of both, but it's like you're not the fucking, you're not the shit. But you're also not shit.
It's mad. The those small interactions that are one of the first ever gigs I did outside. Like I started just turning up outside other people's gigs and doing, I'd beatbox into a loop pedal and perform, and I did a Buck 65 show, an Atmosphere one, all back in the day. And outside the Buck 65 one was Orpheus, who is opening for you guys in London now. And he did a beat on my solo album in the end, but that was from one of my first ever performances. It was just handed a thing out.
Orpheus is...
And he gave me a tape he'd made, a CD he'd made at the time, and I'm touring around just playing on street corners, and that was our soundtrack for that whole tour.
That's crazy.
And then, yeah, I think it was him and Buddy Peace. Right. I know I met Buddy through him, but...
Orpheus has... We're on Strange Famous. We're releasing his album this year.
Yeah.
And he's been a super contributor in the video realm for Strange Famous.
His animation and stuff, because he stopped doing music essentially for a while because he went off to live in Japan and learn animation stuff, didn't
he? Oh, is that where he did it?
Yeah, yeah. He went and studied out there for a while.
Well, he's incredible, and he's also a super weirdo.
Yeah.
I could not, like, we have profile pictures of our artists on Strange Famous, and I can't get one from him.
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me at all. So we use a fucking drawing.
Every now and then, with my club night, I'll have him and Buddy Peace both say, oh, we're going to come down. I'll be like, there's no need to. Like, you're not club people. It's the same as me. I'm not a club person. You're not club people. It would be nice to see you, but let's meet up and hang out. Don't force yourself to come and stand awkwardly in the corner of my club night and be like, I hate this.
You know? I'm surprised he even accepted to open up for us in London. Yeah. It was an off...
Like, it surprised me, like, when I saw you guys...
I thought of it, because they were like, do you guys want openers on this tour? I was like, I guess. Let me know who you think is available.
Yeah.
And London, the offers we got, I just wasn't totally feeling. And then I was like, wait a second. I hit up Orpheus. I was like, cause I've never known him to perform.
Yeah.
And completely. I was like, do you still do live shows?
Yeah, I don't know.
But he said he has this set where projections are interactive with the music that he's playing.
Amazing.
And I'm like,
and calm down.
I was like, hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see this. I've been working with you for over a decade on various things with music and video and whatever, and remixes and whatever else. Yeah. You've just been a very elusive person.
Elusive is key. He's the dude that will... You'll be at the merch booth and someone will give you something. You'll be like, cheers. And then they'll go and you're like, oh, that was all of you. That was Orpheus. So trying to catch another glimpse to kind of get a clear,
I like that. I like
a clear
that.
Look at who he is.
Business wise, I don't like it.
Yeah.
As a CEO of a record label, I must say, I'm not in love with it.
Yeah.
As an artist, I appreciate the fuck out of it.
Yeah.
Because
his social media following. It's awful.
The first artist I put out on speech development, other than myself, was a kind of blues folk musician who had tried playing live twice, didn't see the appeal.
Yeah.
So never did it again. Yeah. Wasn't up for any press.
Right.
And it was one of them. It was exactly that. I was like, I love it artistically though, and that is an album that wouldn't be released anywhere else. Because I said, as a CEO or whatever, it's like, you know, no, fuck this guy. You're going to tour it. No.
Yeah.
Just put it out and be anonymous.
We've definitely suffered from that because we got like talented people, very talented people in our mix
who
just can't tour or not interested in touring.
Yeah.
And good luck to any musician out there who thinks you can make a living off music without touring.
In this day and age in particular,
there is
no way
unless you have... some special type of in at I don't know, a licensing company that's going to get you like big placements.
Yeah.
But that also, I don't see that happening without you having a touring presence because the touring is what promotes everything.
Yeah.
That's what spreads the name. That's what gets people, even your biggest fans, man, like fans that say, you know, how much our music means to them.
Yeah.
Oh, didn't even know about the show until today because Susie Q just mentioned it. And I'm like, what? Yeah. We got to go there. But it's like, that means you're not getting our announcements.
Yeah.
That means you're not signed up to our newsletter. That means our Facebook posts aren't reaching you. Blah, 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 blah.
Mm.
But we toured here. You found out about it because a friend told you. You came and we got a little bit of like compensation from it.
Yeah.
Money-wise, and we need that to pay our bills. Completely. You know, like, how else would they know an album was even out there?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. How have you found the changes in you in recent years as a label manager? Because I've said I've struggled hugely the last a few years doing a speech development kind of on my own, and some of it has been with you guys. Like, there's been a few bits where we've fucked up something numbers wise or accounting, and that kind of shit just that beats me up. Like, you'll know from touring and that, I like to make sure everyone's paid properly and promptly and stuff like that. So when there's small mistakes, it crushes you. And with vinyl these days, it's so hard to get stuff made on time, on delivery dates. And
yeah,
again,
that's crazy. The vinyl is crazy.
There's been numerous releases that I've had it scheduled to be in a month before the release date, and I'm having to talk to the artist and say, it's going to be late. And yeah, it's fucking heartbreaking, but it's the small labels, because although there's been a boom in vinyl, there's been a boom in repressings of Led Zeppelin albums, yeah, in Urban Outfitters.
Wait at least,
so that takes the priority because they're making 10,000 of them. So
at least 4 months, but yeah, you have to have everything prepared at least 4 months ahead of time.
Yeah.
And if you intend on having vinyl when the album release happens.
Yeah.
But
I'm never starting a record label, you guys.
I'm not either. I'm done. I'm not going to do another one.
Yeah.
No, but I did.
that was on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, maybe I should do, I don't know,
a folk label,
like your deathcore,
a little side deathcore,
an imprint.
But I did do an imprint, and that's because the industry changed. I did, yeah, SF Digi.
Yeah.
And that was maybe 3 years ago, it came, yeah, to me because I saw the way the industry was trending, and I said, man, I don't want artists to feel like they have to, when they tour, I know that's how they make their money.
Yeah.
And merch for artists who aren't hugely popular, yeah, mostly the money comes from merch.
Yeah.
So the SF Digi model was allowing them to keep all that money, no kickback to the label.
Yeah.
The only thing we would do, we would promote, we would help them manufacture physical product if they wanted. The only thing we weren't going to do is distribute physical product to stores.
Yeah, I get you.
So that's the difference.
Yeah.
And I've never seen a label offer anything close to that. And still, at the same time, I've banged heads with artists who just don't get the concept.
Right.
Like, I'm telling you, like, okay, I get it. You don't tour, you don't see the value in it. But still in all what we're going to do is just get 50% of the digital sales.
Yeah.
And that's to compensate for what we provide you promotion-wise, publicity-wise, just having you part of everything. Us, like, we have our overhead as well.
Yeah.
We have employees. We have a building. It's not, I don't know. It kind of bugs me. This year I almost was like, I don't know if we can do it past this year. But I can't get too stuck in those ideas because the industry is just changing so rapidly. And I still think there's going to be more people who start to come to the understanding of, oh, okay, yeah, most people stream music these days. Physical product is basically a novelty.
Yeah.
And I can manufacture it if I want, or I can get help with it and have a little boutique place that allows people to purchase it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, shipping is going up and up, especially internationally.
Yeah.
These channels still matter, though, I think, to people who follow the genre, at least. There being a channel, you know, there's a million playlists. You now have access to all music all the time.
Yeah.
But how do you wade into that and find the shit that you're going to like that has, you know, the intent for someone who maybe isn't even that fully engaged with music, just knows, like, I like Sage Francis, I like Scroobius Pip, but I want to hear more stuff like that. Where do I get that?
Yeah.
And the answer is not on, like, Rap Caviar, Spotify front page, mm-hmm, because that space has been, you know, bought up and conquered and arguably was always in the hands of the major labels anyway.
Which most people don't know.
Yeah.
That is an issue. It's just like people are just ignorant to how the industry works and how all those channels are overtaken pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Once the companies see the influence involved, you know?
Yeah. But for that reason, you know, the label becomes, again, like a source of information, of like a filter through which,
yeah,
you know, I can trust that I'm going to get some dope shit that is in line with.
I pissed off a guy recently until I explained that I wasn't being snarky to him, but I did one of them question things on Instagram, and he said, "The only hip hop I listen to is you, Sage, Dolan, and one other guy." I watched that.
Wait, was the other guy white?
Yes, exactly that. And his question was, what should I be checking out? And my response was, you should check people? Some black guys out.
Yeah, people of color.
Really good at rap. Right? They're the best. And he came, I listed some people Jesus. That are still in the similar kind of alt rap or left field rap or whatever. Yeah. And he came back all angry. And I responded, he was fine in the end, because I responded saying, I wasn't calling you racist. I wasn't having to go. I was meaning, because one of the things that you always summed up well, B, was anyone can rap. It's fine. Anyone can be part of the genre as long as you've got respect for the heritage and that you're a guest in the scene as such.
Yeah, you're talking about white MCs.
What, kind of what I put to this guy. I wasn't being a dick, but you've probably gone towards white MCs because you're white and that's subconsciously more relatable. You feel I can relate to what Sage is saying, what B's saying. There's a load that you can relate to that you're not drifting into because of subconscious or barriers that are put up. And yeah, it was a case of that actual personal interaction to say,
what's weird is
check
that
these people out.
Yeah. But what's weird is that we on the flip side, we don't really listen to white fucking rappers.
Exactly. You get in trouble for saying that, but
yeah, I mean, it's very rare.
Yeah.
So the fact that we are the only people you listen to, yet our most favorite MCs are not white.
It's confusing when people say that as well, because you're both guys. I've done it as well. People that reference your influences and put this into your music and stuff. It's not like it's a secret.
And
it's
also,
like,
I think
here's who's dope.
Yeah, and what's strange about it too is like it's alien to us, because it's like hard for us to relate to someone who couldn't feel hip hop until they heard it from someone that looked like them.
Yeah.
Because that's not who we actually are.
Yeah,
we are
people that
heard hip hop from people of color and were like, yeah, this is how this I feel.
to the point
where we had to later address that and modulate that. But like that question always, that stuff always creeps me out when you're like top five MCs are all white.
Yeah.
I'm just like, who are you and what are the weird reasons that you've just boxed off like 90% of the genre that you think you like?
Yeah. But also, to give them a little bit of credence, there is a lot of things that white MCs from our era address that was not previously addressed in hip hop that I get it, that now they're like, oh, now I get it.
You're
now
talking
I
like can suburban relate. Culture.
I mean, our whiteness, like, this is a very multi-tiered thing I'm about to get into. So I apologize ahead of time if I'm about to say some shit that, the way we speak to one another and what is acceptable within white culture is not normal or typical in other cultures, especially the ones that hip hop came from. So for me to come out with music that is vulnerable and use hip hop as the avenue to show my vulnerability.
Yeah.
That is my contribution. Like as far as I'm concerned, that's been my contribution to hip hop, hip hop that has given me so much. Cause I know I had that, like, unique thing in my life that was not there.
Yeah. It's what drew me in initially, already knowing hip hop, but hearing that you can have that
right.
Knowing hip hop, but particularly being in the UK and white, feeling still detached from it. Like, I love this. I love NWA. I love this.
Right.
But I can't relate to that. But hearing the openness to express.
Yeah. I don't even know why I related so much to NWA or to Public Enemy.
You liked Slick Rick a lot. And like I feel like that.
He was the first emo rapper to me.
Yeah.
To me.
You're right, right.
But I feel like anyone who would like come at me like, you guys are the only ones that I can relate to. I could probably, I mean, those are always teachable moments. I usually use them as teachable moments. Those are almost the only time I take the opportunity to speak to people I don't even know.
Yeah.
To be like, hey, check out this, check out this, check out this. Like, I don't know you. I'll never probably meet you. I don't give a fuck what you do with this information, but the information is there. Yeah. For my own
shit. So I don't think I got a racist ass.
Me unpacking my shit right now.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's.
Like, this ain't emo rap. I'm just saying, like, fucking, he, you know, teenage love. He was very, he was very open and sad.
Yeah.
Weirdly, we were speaking before we started, I think, of my Spike Lee interview later that day, Slick Rick.
Whoa.
It was a, because as I was saying, on here, Stephen Graham, who's a mate of mine, who's an actor, his new film is Yardie, which is just this amazing. A Jamaican culture film. It's fantastic. But at the premiere was Slick Rick, and I was like, I was sitting there, I was like, I swear that's Slick Rick. But as stupid as this sounds, because it was such a celebration of Jamaican culture, the premiere had loads of people just dressed really wildly and flamboyantly, and I was like. I'm sure that's Slick Rick, but it might just be a guy with an eye patch, and I don't want to be that dude.
There's five guys with eye patches on this street.
That's it. I don't know.
It's wild. It's wild. He's still wearing an eye patch.
Yeah,
because he doesn't need an eye patch.
He has two eyes.
No, he has like a lazy eye.
If you tell me Slick Rick has two eyes right now,
I'm going to tell you something right now. I don't want to blow your fucking mind. This cat will switch his fucking eye patch from eye to eye
the whole time.
Yeah,
some craziness.
Yeah, I'm not. That's the worst thing I'll ever say.
I've been sending him money.
He's influenced me in ways people don't even know. The way I record my music, highly influenced by Slick Rick. His use of overdubs, and over layering lines, and almost like talking to himself within his verses. That's what I do.
Yeah,
and he's the only one I know who did it. And when I record music, like each track I record vocally, I call them guys.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
It's a lot of
fun. Guys.
It's a lot of fun during mixing sessions. He's like, no, that guy's too loud. Turn that guy.
Yeah. They're their own person. And like, that's how he, like, that was straight up from him. And he still does it. Like, he'll still fucking, from time to time, there'll be a new Slick Rick track that comes out. I'm like, this is fucking good, man.
Amazing.
Yeah. He's still sharp. I did see a concert footage of him where in a big like arena setting where he really messed up and was way too drunk to be performing.
Yeah.
So that's not good, but at the same time, that's separate from recording and writing music.
He was my guy that for the longest time I'd pull him out as my hipster answer. When the streets are blown up and Dizzy and Roots Maneuver and people say, who's the best? A UK MC of all time, Slick Rick.
Yeah.
He's from Brixton. He's from the UK. He was my like, that's the guy. It's Slick. And
is MF Doom? You might know the answer to this. Is he from was he born in the UK and then lived in America?
I don't know. I think so.
We were talking about
because
this
the other of day. All the Lex Records connections, right? And the Camden connections.
There's an issue with his visa, I think.
Right.
He's like banned from returning to America. And I think it's because he's a UK citizen.
I don't know if he's banned. I think he can't return to America just because it means he'll definitely go to prison for some reason.
Right. Because if you mess with the work visa stuff.
Yeah.
Right. He's not banned. We're not going to intercept him at the border.
Mos Def had that shit too, though. Mos Def had that thing going on.
Yeah. I don't know the story with that. I don't know the story with either. I was curious if you knew more about that.
Slick Rick's accent.
Yeah.
I mean, you're from here, so
yeah.
When you hear it, does it sound affected?
Completely. I didn't tweak he was from the UK until someone told me.
That's so funny.
And then I was like, well, obviously he is, but I'd listened to him for years as another American rapper. And then, but just with a weird voice. And then when I was like, oh, he's from the UK. I was like, well, of course he's from the UK. But yeah, it's a bizarre little voice.
Yeah. No, I almost, because I always wondered if he was affecting an accent that he was kind of familiar with, but it wasn't really his speaking accent.
Yeah, completely that. Okay. It's like.
Because there's people I know who are like, he doesn't have an accent.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you serious? Like me growing up, that was my idea of how. English rapper would rap.
Or to this day, it's Dolan's idea of how English people speak.
That's all I hear when you guys talk. Yeah,
when you would always do impressions of
your accents are way too extreme.
Yeah,
you should go to the Slick Rick accent. And you'll have much
so
more.
So what you're saying is when you hear me say, oh, you have an Alof, that doesn't sound exactly like a real British accent to you. That like sounds fake.
Sounds like slippery.
What about Nicki? So,
are you having an Alof?
So Nicki Minaj.
Really?
Nicki Minaj does not sound British to you when she does her little British voice?
No.
No?
Although I saw a video of Post Malone. I've still never heard any of his music, but he did a British accent in a little video recently. It was genuinely on point.
Was it as good as mine, though? Because mine's pretty good.
Debatable.
I listened to Post Malone. I have not heard his music. But he ate a hamburger. It's very American. Fuck you,
Post Malone. I don't give a fuck about you or your blame. Get out of here. Piece of shit.
Fucking, gonna have a pint with Post Malone.
You're killing it right now. This sounds... I feel like if I had my eyes closed...
I'm
in Cornwall.
Everyone's wondering why Sage and B have stopped talking, and I've just taken over and doing it all myself now. Everyone's like, let them get a word in.
Once upon a time, not long ago.
Breakfast, bap!
Go have a little brekkie.
Sorry. Not enough of that.
We've got on to people like Slick Rick, and you saying you saw he had, or saw a rough show he had. It made me think, I saw Biz Markie and then Big Daddy Kane. So Biz was opening for Kane, and Biz came out and it was quite unbearable. Again, it was all over the place.
Yep.
It was forgetting his lines, it was not knowing stuff. But it felt like a setup because then Kane came out and was the tightest, like one of the tightest MCs I've ever seen, just running around the stage, coming in the crowd.
Right.
And you're sitting there thinking, you're Big Daddy Kane, you could just come out and go through it. You've paid all of the dues that need to be paid. And he was coming in the crowd. He got his DJ, was his old breakdancing partner, and they did a little breaking routine at the end. And it was one of the most amazing shows I've ever seen. And it felt like the reason Biz was there was to get your expectations low so that Kane just absolutely blows it out of the water.
What's odd is Biz Markie is probably a bigger draw.
Yeah.
For crowds.
Yeah.
Just his name recognition alone outside of Big Daddy Kane. But
yeah.
I thought he does DJ sets.
Mainly he does DJ sets.
As far as I know, he collects like stems.
His collection is ridiculous.
Yeah, so he not only has the breaks, but he has like the acapella.
So
the
all the Beanie Babies.
I've witnessed this. So I went backstage afterwards with DJ Yoda, who's a UK guy who's like known for having the best collection. And Biz purely invites him backstage to plug his hard drive in and go, have you got this? And Yoda's like, no. And it's like all the parts of the original recordings of the Doors songs and shit like that. And just all this insanely rare stuff. And it was literally just, I was just watching. I didn't engage. I wasn't in, he didn't know who I was. But it was just him just playing stuff to Yoda going, how about this? And Yoda's like, no, I've not got the original a cappella of Let It Be or whatever this shit is. It was mind-blowing.
Those guys in the era where they started were able to, at times, have access to some of those old studios and like, get their hands on.
Yeah.
There's like definitely like a collector's circuit of people like Ant gave me the stems to Don't Stop Till You Get Enough or something.
Yeah.
Like, and that shit is crazy. Like, there's like whole string quartet parts that you don't even hear. They're like really subtle and in the outro and shit. Crazy.
And again, it's amazing that that's what Biz is really into.
Yeah.
He still has to go out and be Biz Markie and do that stuff on stage.
I don't want to understate this. He's into Beanie Babies.
Yeah.
You guys.
Legit.
Yeah.
He also has a collection.
His Beanie Baby collection is fucking insane.
Does he have?
That's his main shit. Not records, not music. He collects Beanie Babies. I played a show with them a few years ago.
Yeah.
He snubbed me. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was about to go on stage, and the promoter was like, hey, just want you to know, Biz Markie's right there if you want to say what up. I'm like, what? Really? Because the first girl I ever made out to was impressed that I knew his Just a Friend verse. Like,
yeah.
The whole song, actually.
Yeah.
I sang, I did it in this, like, the first party I was ever invited to. People were so impressed. And then I wanted to tell him about it, so I went up to him and I said, hey, I don't know if I called him Mr. Markie or like I wanted to have some kind of like professional
some respect, right? Yeah.
I don't want to call it Yo Biz, I don't know you Biz, like, but he just fucking turned his head away and would not look at me, and I was like, all right, cool, I'm gonna do my show. And then I like
tweeted him, said, "You snubbed me." He's like, "No, I didn't." Now I know he's a liar. I'm going to turn him off and back on again. That's what I'm going to do. Bismarcky, like, you are Bismarcked right now.
Reset.
Don't be a Bismarck. You've been marked.
Whoa. Shots fired.
Listen.
I remember watching that playing out on social media.
Okay, you're okay. So, yeah, you're right.
This is legit. I remember this as
it happened. That's what I'm saying.
At what point did the Beanie Baby thing come in?
I am a fan of Bismarcky. Like, right. I know his shit. And I know his, like...
He's into Beanie Baby.
He's into weird collection shit.
Marvelous Mala.
He's not into showering.
Does he have
Inky? Into collecting Beanie Babies.
Did he have Peanut? Did he have Mystic? Did he have Millennium?
I don't even know. I didn't know they had names. I didn't know it was a fucking Pokemon thing.
Well, it's something that some people are pretty serious about. Like, there's a whole community. There's a whole community.
Some couples get divorced and have to split up their Beanie Baby collection.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I'm not trying to get into this mess.
This is really sad.
Have you had any kind of experiences, not of Bismarcky or of Beanie Babies, but where you've kind of, you've had those, oh shit, I'm here with this artist or that. It's good. Again, I've said this.
Yes, he has had those things.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about.
Well, your homeboy from Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah. Robert Plant. I ran into him that one time by accident.
Where? How? Why?
At the Austin Music Awards, where my homegirl Genevieve, she was playing strings, and I thought I was going to meet her backstage. So she had got me these like VIP seats. I sat in the front, watched the whole thing, and Robert Plant came on at the end and performed with a bunch of like blues legends from Austin.
Insane.
And they just did this like 3-song thing, and then it was over. So I thought that I was going to meet Genevieve backstage, and I just like walked through a curtain thinking it was a much bigger area than it was back there. And it wasn't. I just walked directly into like amps and gear, and coming down off the stage was Robert Plant. And we just like ran into each other in the hallway, and I was like, Hey man, you know, like I shook his hand. I don't even actually remember.
Did you shake his hand?
Yeah. I was just like, respect, man. I just gave him like the most.
He let you touch. You touch hands.
Yeah, yeah. Because he was taken aback by me. Like, who is this giant motherfucker that just came in here and, like, you know. And like, so, yeah.
If I'm Robert Plant, I'm not touching your hand.
No. I was just like, yo, respect. That's great. Like, we made
that's a good
eye
thing.
To eye, you know. I'm a fan. Handshake. Yeah. And then I just ran the fuck away. I didn't really run away, but, like, I didn't visibly run because I never
shin
run.
Shin splints.
Yeah. I got away from him as fast as possible. That was the only feeling inside me, was like, get away from him before you hear him say another word.
Yeah.
Because I was afraid he was going to like ask someone for a Snapple.
Yeah.
And then forever after, every time.
I think there's also that beauty of having been backstage and knowing that you don't want unknown people backstage.
Yeah,
In any situation, it's never comfortable. Even if they're...
No, it always sucks.
Even if they're the most polite and respectful, it's if you've just come off stage, you want that kind of, I just need to
have
this. Even if it's an employee of the venue.
Yeah.
I security. Hate it so much. It's one of the, like, I get backstage rage.
Yeah.
It's like road rage, but I'm backstage and then someone's walking in my space. I'm like, can I have my own fucking space for a little bit?
Do you really need that case of drinks for the bar?
No. Yeah. Just give Are me you this really going to fucking walk your dog like to the exit through our dressing room
My worst experience was I went to see Stephen Merchant doing his stand-up, who did The Office and all that kind of thing. He's really good. And it was a great show. And just as I was leaving, the promoter of the show came up and went, oh, a fan of your stuff, like, would you like to come back and meet Stephen? And I'd been on Stephen's radio show like a month or so before, so I thought we'd got on, but still I was like, no, it's fine. He's like, no, come back and meet the guys. It was three comedians who'd been on, and I literally was walked in and they're all talking and they literally all just stopped, and I was like, you're right, that was good show. And
comedians like, do that though.
It was horrible and it wasn't them in the wrong again.
What I'm saying is
it's my fault. I had no reason to be there.
Well, you like, were pressured to.
Yeah, that's it. I was talked into it, and but as soon as I stepped there, I was like, oh, this is horrible.
Comedian culture is all about those kind of talks, closed though.
In, yeah. Backstage room, yeah. I
they love that. Talking. They yeah. love fucking, like, just playing off things. That, like, yeah. they'll do routines on you before
yeah.
you know it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And you're
yeah.
like, oh, you're doing a bit right now. Like, I thought we were having a fucking heart-to-heart. Okay, I get it. Like, yeah.
Did you experience any of that in Edinburgh? Because I remember yeah. kind of convincing yeah. you guys that Edinburgh, or talking to you, saying Edinburgh's a good idea, and one of you saying, I'm not sure our pull in Scotland is big enough for a home. I was like, oh, there won't be any Scottish people there. There also won't be any black people there, any yeah. hip-hop fans there. Yeah. It will be, but yeah. it's an amazing thing. And Americans don't really have an Edinburgh fringe as such. But
I think we... I think it's fantastic. Not an Edinburgh fringe. I mean, there are fringe festivals.
Yeah, there's no, definitely no, nothing one. In America that's a month long. That is
or that extensive.
Yeah.
Because just before you did that, I had a breast put out a thing on Netflix that was his experience of the fringe, and I wasn't sure if I should send it to you guys to watch or not, because it's him liking it and then him hating it and wanting to quit and leave, and by the end it just turns around. But literally halfway through he's doing these gigs and he's like, oh, why I'm here, I don't know what the point yeah. of this is, I've got burnt out, I'm tired.
B put me onto that, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, well, your show sucks, so that's why it's not.
Yeah,
you're,
yeah.
That's why you're not having a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey,
have you found comedians? It?
Wait a second. I just said something I may have to answer to later on in life.
Yeah.
I respect what he's done.
Yeah.
In the Bill Cosby movement.
Damn right.
But his approach in that documentary in particular.
Yeah.
And the way he was going about it was real
you weren't feeling it.
Underwhelming.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry you didn't know how to work that circuit. And you're a black person from America in Scotland trying to make them understand, man, your type of fucking humor.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a hard enough time trying to get them to deal with, like, basic.
We did that too.
Yeah. Basic shit. Where it was just like, well, this is some days you're looking at like a room full of like older white people than I've ever seen at our shows before.
Totally, yeah.
And you're like, you feel bad saying, or you feel as if you're performing for your parents.
Yeah. Or completely. Or when you were telling me the plan for the show at first, you were like, oh, we take it turns for some spoken word, and then we end on a few songs. I'm like, you end on some raps in a tent.
You're doing a little tent. A little tent.
Not the best.
On a stage that would literally collapse.
And it did legit work. And it's kind of,
yeah.
It
took some adjusting of what we do. But is why by the second year that we went back, we were just like, fuck doing our actual material for the fringe. Because the fringe is like a very singular thing that like you sort of have to write for.
It's the reason I've only done it once, because I had exactly that. I was like, if I go back, I need to have a show that is for the fringe, not just a gig. Because I did a spoken word gig 19 nights in a row.
Yeah.
It wasn't a show.
And the way you're being reviewed is because the fringe is not just stand up, it's also theater.
Yeah.
So like half the reviews you'll get are theater reviews and theater audiences who come in looking for a theater type experience.
Yeah. And you're going
to hear it's like, here's a rap song about American politics.
Yeah.
Which to our fans is like, I know that song, I like that song. This is cool to see it reimagined in this way and see your material put like woven together like this,
but that was
by year
two. What's the most dangerous
together a full
what's the most dangerous type of act or confrontational type of act that's ever happened at Fringe? Has an artist ever really done anything worth like opening your eyes wide and being like, holy shit?
It's tough because the people that do
is it all safe art?
It's not all safe art, but again, like on the stand-up front, for example, the people that do, the first two times I saw Doug Stanhope, it was to Doug Stanhope crowds.
Whoa, he did Fringe?
He's done the Fringe, yeah, but he then kept doing, one year he did the Fringe where you could just pay to spend the evening with him. He wouldn't go and do a gig.
But can we do that? That's an option.
He just made these crazy things up, but that's what I was going to say. That's the problem. The first two times I saw Doug, it was his own crowd, and it takes a bit of the edge and excitement away. I then saw him at the Pimm's Comedy Festival. Mm. So Pimm's like the posh English drink comedy festival. And it was amazing because people were walking out. There was a girl next to me.
That's what I'm talking about.
He started a routine over that side of the room and she was screaming in anger. And by the time he got round the stage, the routine had flipped and you'd seen that he's actually a very intelligent writer and he uses confrontational stuff to then make these points. And she had to sit down and be quiet because he'd flipped it to show the reason. So it was just, that was amazing to watch. But there are a few huge Scottish comedians in particular who are known for being really outlandish. So they will have done some of the most edgy, dangerous stuff comedy-wise on stage. But
has anyone jerked off? Has anyone jerked off with peanut butter on stage? Is what I'm asking.
I mean, I'd have to check. I'd have to check my files. All right.
I understand where you're going. Is it a real place for transgressive art when it's so expensive? Because that
100%. It's now become. It was at a time. It's now become. Again, there's a conflict in comedians going up there as well because of the Comedy Award. That it's now. It seems like the whole month is a competition, which is ugly as
awful.
Fuck.
That's awful. Disgusting.
That's the worst. It's a big poetry slam.
Yeah, there's the big poetry slams and all that kind of thing.
But it's a month-long poetry slam where you're trying to get the good scores from the judges. They need all the stars. And again, fuck all that,
that's
man.
Disgusting. And it has also become, because there was this era of Edinburgh shows then becoming TV shows and so on and so forth, that it did become this incredibly, like you're going up there to pitch yourself rather than to actually take. And again,
it's an economic opportunity.
It's bizarre because it's the fringe, and that's meant to mean it's experimental and new and working out new stuff. But everyone goes there with, or tries to go there with a complete show, a finished show, to get their good reviews and their good scores rather than go there. Because it feels like too important a place to go and try stuff out, which is
not
crazy because it's meant to be a fringe.
we didn't give
half a fuck by the end of year two.
Yeah.
We were just we need some trampolines.
I love it.
Whatever the fuck, man. That's why the second year we went back, we were like, okay, like because there is an opportunity there for 30.
What you just said, Mr. Pip.
Yeah.
I never really considered. I didn't know people were like launching actual careers out of it.
Yeah.
But because our experience has really been how do you entertain people for 27 days in a row while doing something that you typically wouldn't do at a normal show?
Yeah.
And push yourself artistically.
And that's what it should be.
Yeah, that's not what other.
Yeah,
people
and that's not what it is.
Yeah, no. Yeah, completely. Because there's a we could turn the TV on now and probably find a show that started off.
That's incredible. I had never ever knew anything about that.
I peeped that because it was like right away there were certain shows like, and I had certain conversations with our promoters and stuff who were telling me that. Well, you know, right away at the beginning of the festival, that's when you want the best reviews. Unfortunately, the biggest papers are already being like ushered into seats at the most expensive shows in town that are big money ventures that are being like launched here. So, yeah, that's right away like where the big money has bought up like the biggest chunk of the festival before you get there.
Our TV show would have sucked.
Yeah. It would have been a bad
show. Yeah, there's no season.
No. Well, we could have had a public access run. Tricknology? If Tricknology was on every Sunday at 10 a.m. At 10 a.m.
It would be a 15-minute segment every Sunday for about 6 months.
But then you have comedians who are trying to hustle. They're distributing flyers all day, doing five shows a day. They're just trying to get in front of the most people as possible. And then you had us, who were just like the relaxed American weirdos who did not give a shit, walked to our venue, did our one-hour show, walked out of the venue, got some coffee, went up to the apartment, wrote rap songs.
Yeah.
Ate Malaysian food.
I love that you sat in the middle of these things. So there's one end that are these high-end shows that have got big budgets and all this. You've got the other end where people are spending all day flying. I know that you guys weren't like, I'm going to go and fly on my show.
Not at all. Like,
fuck that shit. Like, so it's sitting right in that middle.
I see it and I respect the heck out of that grind because I know it sucks.
Yeah.
I saw them when we were there just a few days ago and I'm like, God, man, that sucks. Like you're just fucking.
You're begging. You're begging, please come to my show. Yeah. Come, honestly, and it's a weird, It's a weird place. But yeah, so the best way to describe it, I've realized to American minds, is it's the South by Southwest of the arts.
Yeah.
It's people traveling there to thinking, I'm going to get signed, I'm going to get noticed, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get that.
Except it's much more stretched out.
Yeah.
And it's more, more of the same for a longer period of time.
Yeah.
I mean, South by Southwest is, for music, it's about 4 days.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's film stuff, there's other stuff that makes it a little bit longer.
But in the way it's like set up and tiered and the way it's advertised versus find when you get there.
And the way that people go there thinking, this is my big break. And then you get there and you're like, this is everyone's big break.
Most of this is spoken for.
This is 100 people's big break.
You guys can fight over this.
Yeah.
Well, that was one thing where with South by Southwest, it would break bands in a certain point of time. Not now. It's not like that now. It's almost like South by Southwest is a festival, not a conference, where they highlight groups who already have backing and already have support and already have financing, and this is their way of getting extra promotion. And
they play the Dorito stage.
Yeah. You play the Dorito stage, and then
they're compensated $200. I remember
we played there. Kanye was playing the same night as us. It was a few years ago.
I remember that. I was there the year I was there because
sold out our shit that night.
Yeah.
That was my best time at South by Southwest.
Yeah. Generally the same, and I always feel bad saying it because that was the year that me and Dan were meant to be coming, and Dan got swine flu or bird flu and couldn't come.
Right.
So I was on my own there. Right. Yeah, it was the best run I'd ever had because it was the first time I saw, heard, experienced Curtis Plum. It was the first time I'd seen POS live. It was as I was going on stage. This is my version of the Bismarck thing. As I was going on stage, Buck and Idea was side stage, and they were two people I owned all their records, and I just got to say, "Hey, man!" And then I went, and they stood there and watched, and that to me was like it meant everything. And
that was beautiful.
It was at that show that my American manager, who you guys weren't the biggest,
I thought he was a fucking twat,
Michael, right? Michael Scott.
It was basically Michael Scott. He messaged me to say, "I've got us into Perez Hilton's party, which Kanye's playing at." And I was at that with you guys. I was like, "No, man, I'm staying here." Because these, again, it sounds sycophantic, but Buck and Idea and the Rhymesayers guys and you guys and all the Strange Frames, that's the people I had on my shelf. I didn't have Kanye on my shelf. Right. So just because he's this, it's this exclusive gig, it was a great moment to message back and go, "No, man, I'm good. I'm kind of just hanging out here and doling out to stop a guy trying to take me off to have..."
Was it crystal meth? PCP.
PCP. Yep. I didn't understand the terms. He asked if I get wet, and I was like, "Well, I mean, sometimes. Swimming, stupid, ignorant British guy." And he's like, "No, he doesn't get wet. You just get away from the merch stand. Go, man." Almost got dragged off.
That was literally the last enjoyable South by Southwest for me.
Yeah,
that was in 2008, 2007?
Yeah, I'd say so.
After that, I only was able to enjoy South by Southwest by focusing not at all on the performance and only on the being there.
Yeah.
Like, the performance itself was never satisfying after that because... And it's the same thing. Like, that was a legendary show that took place at South by Southwest. If you wanted to ask our label to put it down, we couldn't have put it down better at that time.
Yeah.
That show was incredible. Start to finish, fucking... If you weren't there... Sucks to be you forever. Yeah. Like, but.
And the only time we've done songs with Curtis Plum.
Yeah. Only time Curtis Plum, like, ever.
He showed up. I mean, he's in a very, 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 very specific, messed up situation.
Yeah.
Mental health wise.
Yes. Yeah.
And I feel like I can say it because he's already mentioned it, but he's severely schizophrenic.
Yeah.
And he cannot go out and do things, and heavily medicated, which messes with him.
Yeah, of course.
It sucks so bad because he's so fucking cool. He's such a fucking talented dude.
Yeah,
and we're constantly asked, like, when is he coming here?
Yeah,
and we're forever just like, he's not coming here.
Yeah. He's just He showed up unannounced. He didn't even want to let us know he was coming.
I remember.
He was probably like, who the hell knows if I'm even going to make it?
He'd had some trouble on the journey there and all sorts of drama.
Since then, there's been a lot of issues. Apparently, he's doing very well. I interacted with him recently.
It's great to hear.
He's feeling better.
Because I was in contact with him until a few years back. But again, it was saying that he was going to come to the UK because he needed to get away from his situation and stuff like that. And it was all that kind of, it was like, look, if I can help in any way, I'm here. But yeah.
Yeah.
That well, tough.
He did end up in prison for a few years.
Yeah.
Did not hurt anybody, but he is constantly trying to figure out the proper medication. His mom is helping. She's been wonderful. She's awesome. And I do my best to stay in touch with them. It's so fucking tough though, man, because that disease, it insists upon itself, and it fucking makes people not know who to trust. Medication is also not awesome. It always has dumb side effects. Mm. But that is why South by Southwest, the year we did it, that's my favorite memory.
Yeah.
Because I never got to fucking perform with him.
Yeah.
And I was always a fan of him. And when I released his album.
You ended the whole show with Call My Cell Phone. Yeah. And it was just the most amazing thing. Yeah.
When we released his stuff, because no one knew who he was. He didn't have a following.
Yeah.
We straight up just released this dude's album who had no following, no live performance history.
Because he hit you up on MySpace.
Yeah, I thought
I remember playing me stuff in a car journey at some point, and starting off, I was like, I don't know why you're releasing this. And by the end of the tape, I was like, yo, play how soon can I get this? Can you send this to me immediately?
Yeah, that's so wild, right? Because like most of my friends who are rappers love him.
Yeah.
Like they're like, there's something about it that just clicks, and you're like, man, there's something really fucking special about this. I dig it. I enjoy it. But then there was all these rappers who like are more rappy than Curtis Plum is.
Yeah.
They're like, I should be the one who was released on Strange Famous. What is this shit? Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm sorry you don't understand what's enjoyable about this type of music.
But that's the reason that you can't be fucking released on Strange Famous. Because if you were dope, you would know that he's dope. Yeah.
Because every fucking great artist on our label was fucking fawning over trying to get a feature.
Yeah.
What's up with this Curtis Plum? How can we get this like going? I'm like, man, like, I don't know.
As soon as I got a radio show on XFM, one of the first songs I played was Indie Rocker.
That's crazy.
Because it's just it's just genius.
And I made a remix to Vin Diesel and no one asked me to. And when I had to ask Curtis, it was okay. Like, yo, can I extend this beat? I really want to be part of this song. Hitting Curtis up.
Level 10 best friend.
Level 10 best friend, Curtis Plum. Shout out to you.
100%. So I'll wrap things up with talk of Epic Beardman and how it's been putting a show together when you've both got 10 years worth of touring and headlining in your own rights, to then go, how do we put together a show where, and how does it feel as well to be sharing the stage? Because it must take some pressure off of just being that one up there, having two up there, having someone who's got your back.
I'm sure it does. I'm not sure how it affects you. I feel like the two last years we did at Fringe was a great introduction of how this could work, because we would often trade our time on the microphone and then share time on the microphone all during the same hour. Personally, I definitely feel less pressure to I can't imagine it would be any different for you when you're the sole person who has to hold an entire crowd up and like juggle the energy of the crowd and make sure you are satisfying every need that they have throughout. We get to share that now.
Like, do you feel you get more time to play as well? Because I filmed a little bit of the show tonight and I posted the video, and it wasn't until I was watching the video that my highlight was the little added bits from Sage. It was on film, The Police.
Yeah.
And it was just the little, that's legal, and then, what? When he goes, still fuck the police. It's just stuff like that. It's like, you're getting to have fun. It's not detracting from it because it's still got the intensity in this. But it's like,
my secret calling in life was to be a fucking hype man.
Yeah, yeah.
I happen to have been cursed with lyricism.
Yeah.
I like Flavor Flav is a great influence. Yes. I love what he provided to Chuck D.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Public Enemy shows. Yeah. And I always, like, that's my inclination. That's what I like to do, to provide a kind of a support, not just with, like, words, but certain expressions and whatever. Whatever motions and plotting happens on stage. That, I love that. Like that, so doing these things together with B is my, I get to like finally live that dream for at least half the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I had to learn to do that shit. I was not good at that shit to begin with. But I think that's also because I was like still mastering shit, like breath control and shit. Because I used to like look at him on stage and be like, how the fuck does he have so much breath control like 45 minutes in? There were during times when I was still getting my shit together. Like I feel like until I headlined, I would struggle with like, what the fuck am I doing right now if I wasn't the center of attention?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, having figured out what I'm doing in all parts of the show, ideally on my own, somehow I have more comfortability now to relax in a two-person environment where I don't have to do that anymore. So like, I'm like dancing more and shit and just, if I catch myself like having fun,
because now I'm in control. Because I never had that with me and Dan. And part of it was when he's doing his shit, I try and go as far off the stage as possible, simply because if Dan is behind the decks all the time. Yeah, yeah. So if he's doing some amazing shit, but there's a 6'4" bloke stood at the front of the stage, I'm still going to be drawing the attention. Yeah. So part of it was to give him his dues, but also part of it was, I don't know what to do when he's doing
a
3-minute cut up at the end. I'll just stand again.
And there used to be times where, like, I think maybe that's it too, that I can't, when I started doing this by myself, I was for years I was in a place of like, I just get lost on stage and I just fucking lose all control.
Right.
And that's not really what it's about. That's one of the things that I learned from him early on. Like, I always remember the first time we did Damage live and it transitions to Annie Up by MOP.
Yeah.
Because when that song came out, I used to trash my whole apartment. I used to fucking like 4 times a day we would put on Annie Up and just wreck the fucking apartment. These are like, you know, teenage Dole years. But it's fucking, so I'm on stage and I'm getting to rap on Annie Up.
Yeah.
And I just fucking, I just dropped every line. I had like no breath control. I fucked up. And afterwards, I was like, yo, backstage, I'm like, I'm sorry, man. I fucked that up bad. And he was like, you're having too much fun. You were like, you're not out of control. You're in control.
I completely agree. It's finding the balance. It's fine. It's putting everything in, but still being able to be in control. And it's weird because I learned the most of that at the Fringe. Doing a show in the same venue 19 nights in a row, that, although it was a spoken word show, I then feel, then when I returned to touring with Dan and everything else, I was 10 times better a performer because I had that kind of awareness of being the ringmaster rather than the lion.
And you could chill.
You know what I mean? Being there in control of it all, still giving everything, but having that awareness, I guess.
I used to crash into him. There was a time when he made me, he was like, we're putting the mic in the stand. Don't leave the mic from this. You have to stay. You have to stay with the mic stand.
This is your place. You better not leave it. Go on timeout, be done.
I just stumble into shit, kick over a monitor, like grab somebody in the front. Just I was like, fucking.
Don't you take a shower on stage?
I treated
now.
The stage like my hotel room. You know, I was just getting comfortable.
I love it. Well, I mean, everyone can find all the Epic Beer Men stuff for free.
God damn it.
I mean, it's available for free.
For free?
And if you feel like supporting, there are definitely ways to do that. Okay. But we want people to access it. If you think it's dope, I'd love if you share it with your friends and people in your circle.
Your mom.
What else do we have? How else will we ever be heard? Because there are not companies, there are not publicists, there are not any like part of the industry that's trying to push our kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and I guarantee you, we've put in enough time. We've experienced enough shit in this world and displayed enough talent that it's fun, it's enjoyable, and I want us to be able to do more, and we can't without having organic support.
Yeah,
and I don't want to boost FB posts. I don't want to boost posts on Facebook.
We don't want to boost posts support
on YouTube. And I don't want to keep paying for shit that to companies who can fuck off.
It's genuinely because it means the world as well. I had someone the other day asking me what comment bot I use, because they were saying, "Oh, you're liking and replying to everything." I was like, "No, I'm liking and replying because this post meant a lot to me, and all of these comments mean a lot to me. I'm not liking and replying because I'm using a bot that's answering and responding to these things." It's right. Like, no, I responded to them because, as you said, that's how all of us have built our careers, is having that fan base that will shout about us.
It's literally our outreach to people. It's literally. Yeah. The main outreach to people.
Yeah.
And it sucks because we don't own those platforms.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it. I fucking hate it. And it's our only outreach to the fucking fans. Yeah. And it's been like that forever for me. Yeah. Like starting in the late 90s using message boards and then going from Friendster to MySpace to Facebook and Instagram and Twitter.
We should create a BBS. We should make it so that there's just like a modem at the Strange Famous office, and you have to dial that modem to talk to Strange.
It will come to that point. That doesn't sound too crazy to me. I think for people to understand that they have to make a little bit of effort to access material that provides something to their life.
Yeah.
I feel we do that. I feel like we provide that with the artists that we help,
completely.
Like the careers we foster through them and with them. And at a certain point, we will break, Ben. Like, I am jealous of motherfuckers who just dropped off the planet and said, nah, no more of this. Because I look at it and I'm like, you piece of shit. I'm so jealous.
While we're on social media, is there a lower form of social interaction ever than the pointing out who someone looks like? Because I've never seen any worth of it in any way. There's never, they're really
I'll
funny.
I'll take this question. Nah, I'm fucking...
But yeah,
I will say this.
It's constant, and it's not even always a joke or an insult. Yeah, or anything. Yeah. It's like, oh, he looks like that person.
He looks like a guy.
So what have we added here?
What's the name of the comedian that these motheruckers
keep? Ahmed Jaheli is the one they often say to you. But again, I've had a few recently where I've done posts, I go, they've not said it in an aggressive way. They said, oh, he looks like this guy. It's like,
no, I know.
What are we adding to this? What did that, what did typing that add to the world? He looks like someone else.
Pip, we have to make connections in this world.
But yeah.
One of the first things babies learn is facial recognition.
Yeah.
So these are just facial recognition.
I mean, actually, this is something I've never told people, but if you go through my Instagram, every picture I've ever posted of you two guys, I tag the wrong one.
I always tag
Sage's B. Dolan
that's
and
Sage. Helpful. Thank you.
Just... because of the annoyance that B got. It's one time I've seen him genuinely angry at me, because after he'd done his set, someone came up to him or me and said, Pete Dolan was amazing. And it made me laugh. So on stage, I was like, yo, who enjoyed Pete Dolan? And afterwards, it's the first time B was like, it's funny, but you know, this is literally how I'm getting my name out there. Told everyone I'm Pete Dolan.
It's an uphill battle already, man. I look like another motherfucker on the same label as me.
Well, we just did a show in Korea where our image, like, my name was on him and his name was on me in the flyer. And I'm like,
yeah.
I like this. It's just cool. Like the old days.
We've embraced it too. In the You Can't Win video, there's a moment where we took the time to swap each other's clothes and shoot one quick cutaway where we've switched uniforms, and it took the internet about 4 months to notice that ever happened.
You know, and we were like, we're going to do this every video. And then like, we did. I'm sad that tradition died so quickly. But I will say, based on your question... One thing I have consciously not done is try to shame Trump's looks.
yeah.
or any conservative right-wing yeah. people's looks, because I noticed very early on the left fell into a trap of talking the way people on the right often would yeah. about
with looks and sexuality.
Yeah.
And right. I like becoming a thing that whoever is right and oh, they're that's his boyfriend or this or that. Or
right.
It's like,
how's
this? Why is this the insult here? Yeah. There's so much to insult.
Yeah. No, there's so there's much. A lot of material so here.
We don't need to just go.
Let's not talk about that. Yeah. And I'm sure I have said some shit in the past. Yeah, I'm absolutely sure. But there's often times where I see comments and I'm like, from smart people, from clever people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are you talking about this? Because, like, if anyone said that about the other side, because it has nothing to do with what's actually happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. He looks like a fucking whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not going to contribute.
Yeah. You're not going to say about it. So then go, here's my 5 minutes on Trump's looks.
I know what he looks like.
Have you noticed?
But yeah.
It dilutes the fucking...
The narrative,
the darkness, the shit that's going on, because it's like it's this silly, laughable character that we're painting when there's serious stuff to be angry about, rather than the way he looks or
But you know, it helps the algorithm. So like and subscribe. Who do we look like? Tell us who we look like in our Polaroid. Who does it look like Pip standing with in that Polaroid? Take your best shot. Caption contest.
Name a better duo.
Tag a friend. Name a more iconic trio.
I got genuinely the worst post I've done in ages. It was a video, but it was that picture of Name a More Iconic Trio. And if you stared at it for 10 seconds, it shook and it became a picture of us three. And I was
really?
Like, yeah. I was like, this is hilarious. It's great. It's us three. It's this thing. No one looked at it long enough. Everyone responded with a more iconic trio. It's like, all the caption said was, stare for 10 minutes and wish really hard, or 10 seconds and wish hard, and it does. It starts to shake and then switches to us. But
I gotta watch that.
That's an underappreciated
tweet. I'll show you on
spent time on
my phone. Yeah, I did.
Let's all go back and like and retweet that.
Anyway,
I was gonna do the Three Stooges. That was my I was gonna respond and be like, Three Stooges.
Yeah,
like obviously, there's no fucking more iconic trio,
because no one looked for long enough. It killed me. It broke me. The game.
Well, now you know people's like Paul Simon attention song. Level as has shortened to probably 2.5 seconds.
It's so minimal.
At first, we were like 30 seconds. We got them for an advertisement.
Yeah,
nah.
2 seconds.
Two and a half at most.
That's your lot. Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to roll it back.
I love you, Scroobius Pip.
I love you guys.
Thanks for wearing my t-shirt while we do this interview.
I'm going to say I'm wearing a Dan Lissac t-shirt with Dan. Does look quite like Sage now in this light. I had two different people come up to me tonight and go, Dan, I love your
stuff. Yes, you got mistaken for Dan Lissac.
I'm wearing a Dan Lissac t-shirt. I can't be Dan Lissac because that would be weird.
We were with you when that happened one time.
Yeah, that was...
That is super weird.
It happens a lot. It's weird. Night.
Thank you. Good night, everybody. And Strange Famous!
Speech Development.
Epic Beer Man.
Scroobius Pip.
St. Francis.
Poop.
Be Dolan. Out.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was episode 236 of the Distraction Pieces podcast. We could have talked for hours, but I was aware that they had a gig the next day. They had a long drive the next day. They had to drive from Cardiff to Oxford, I think. So, yeah, we wrapped things up. After that, me and B had to move some merch. So I'd taken some merch up, some copies of their vinyl, available at speechdevelopmentrecords.com, to sell at the shows. And then we realised that we were in separate car parks, so it was easier to move my car. We moved the cars, we transferred the merch, and then we started to walk back. And literally as we got back to the hotel, I asked B a question about something. And he said, look, this has got a long answer. Do you want to go and get a kebab? So we got, I think, a 3 a.m. kebab in that little side street in Cardiff that has all the, like, in between the two a shop in High Streets, that little side street that has all the kebab places and takeaway places open all goddamn night. So I went and sat there and talked for another half hour to an hour. So, but that was all stuff that we couldn't say on the podcast. I mean, some of the stuff on the podcast, as you will have heard, is stuff that we probably shouldn't have said on the podcast, but that's what we get for you. All this aside, you know, need to end by saying I love both these guys. It was exciting to see them. They've had a hell of a year. They've toured their asses off, and now they're on some well-earned time off, or time off the road, at least, let's say. But keep an eye on everything. Go on their socials, Sage and Dolan, and on the Strange Famous socials, and on the Speech of Element Records socials. Check all of us out and keep up to date. Yeah, and I'll be back next week for a Halloween two-parter with one of the biggest guests I've ever had. So that's pretty exciting. You're going to enjoy it, I promise you. It's also the best interview I've ever heard with this particular guest. It's somebody who doesn't do a lot of interviews, granted, but we go deep. For someone who isn't that into press, again, I'm lucky because he's kind of a mate. So, yeah, it's a good one. It's a Halloween special. I also might be releasing a little surprise bit of merch on Halloween, a special version of something that previously sold out in 2 hours, I think. I'll probably give a preview of that on the Patreon. So head to patreon.com/ScroobiusPip. It's only a quid or less than a quid. Sign up there and you'll be the first to find out about these little treats. So, yeah. Anyway, I'll talk to you all later. Go and give us some love on Patreon and Spotify and Acast and iTunes. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.